This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education, by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus, global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Right now, though, let's get to a story in the upcoming new issue of Bloomberg Business Week. It's out on newsstands tomorrow. It's right now online and on the Bloomberg Terminal. The story notes that in the U.S., the most elusive piece of any new energy project isn't material. We're not talking about things like copper or steel, labor, or even capital. It is actually something as simple as a permit. Turns out, getting permits and getting these projects through, not so simple. So let's get to it. Joining us to talk about what's going on is Bloomberg News energy reporter Josh Saul, one of the reporters on the story. He's on Zoom in New York City, along with Bloomberg Businessweek editor Joel Weber in our Bloomberg Interactive Broker studio back in New York City. Joel, I had no idea, as you guys lay out in this story, how long it takes.
You had no idea. I had no idea. I have a funny joke in my house where my son will like build a fort and I'll be like, you got a permit for that? And that helps me like, you know, put a damper on the fort building. Turns out the U.S. also really good at putting a damper on big, ambitious U.S. energy projects. And what was even more surprising, perhaps, from Josh on this story and company on this story is that that's created some unlikely allies. What's going on, Josh?
That's a good dad joke, Joel. I'm going to start using that. So what's happened here is that the permitting system in the U.S. is so old and so complicated that to build, for example, a transmission line that's going to carry clean power across the U.S., to build a new gas pipeline, to build a new solar farm that's going to create that kind of clean electricity that we want, can take years, can take 10 years. Some of the projects we've written about, it can take 17 years and there's still not steel in the ground. And what that does is it costs companies billions of dollars. You know, it slows down the energy transition and the fight against climate change that we're trying to get going with all the clean energy. Just a really inefficient, bureaucratic way that it's set up right now. And that's created some strange bedfellows, like you said, where you have oil companies and clean energy companies and Republicans and Democrats, you know, folks who usually do not shake hands, all getting together and saying, hey, we need to make this better.
Not only Democrats and Republicans, but also within the energy world, right? You've got renewables and fossil fuel people. Everybody hates this. So yeah. What's that dialogue been like?
It's hard to build anything. And that means that in a broad sense, you have a lot of different companies, a lot of different groups, a lot of different advocacy groups and lobbyists all saying, this needs to be streamlined. You know, instead of doing, 2 years to designate the corridor for a transmission line, and then 4 or 5 years for the environmental review, and then another 2 years for a different federal agency to get going, and then another environmental review that can take 4 or 5 years. Those are real timelines. I'm not making that up. As ludicrous as it sounds, they're saying, hey, maybe we can get this into a, you know, one year type schedule.
So there's a side in this story that Bloomberg has covered before, but it was a reminder of just how hellish this can look like. There's this 500-mile-long SunZia Southwest transmission projects. How bad can this permitting stuff get, Josh?
It really bad. That the SunZia line, which is going to carry clean power, so solar power from big solar fields in New Mexico to the Phoenix area. And that's important if you care about climate change, for the idea that we'll be displacing, you know, natural gas fired plants in the Phoenix area with electrons created by the sun that'll be flowing from New Mexico. But in order to do that, you have to build a power line to carry them to carry them those 520 miles. That's really hard to do. So that process has been going on for 17 years. And it's not a one-off. I wrote a story last year about a different power line, which would carry electricity from the windy plains of Wyoming, really windy area, to down towards Las Vegas, again, displacing natural gas-fired plants and other kinds of fossil fuels. And that's also been hung up for closer to two decades than one decade at this point, because it takes so long to get all of the federal permits, to get all the private permissions, to cross all of the different kind of land that a project like that would go over.
Hey, Josh, can we talk pizza?
Yes.
I love this quote in your story.
I'm surprised we got this far into the conversation. One of the energy analysts we spoke to had a fun analogy, and this gets to the idea that yes, there are strange bedfellows, both Republicans, Democrats, oil and gas, solar and wind folks all want to reform the system. But an energy analyst had a good point, which is that yeah, in a broad sense, everyone wants reform of the system. They all want, hey, yeah, let's order pizza, but actually getting down to the specifics of, well, what should the reform look like is as hard as when you have a room full of people and you're trying to decide whether you're going to be ordering veggie pizzas, meat pizzas, anchovy pizzas, pineapple, Hawaiian. And the point there is that, you know, the oil folks want less federal oversight. The transmission folks want more federal oversight because they want the states overruled, because the states are sometimes the ones who, you know, who put up roadblocks, as two examples. And the point is that it's easy to say, yeah, we want permitting reform, but it's a lot the same way it's easy to say, hey, let's order pizza, but it's a lot harder to drill down and say, this is actually what it should look like, when you have lots of different groups that want different things. Yeah. And the analyst we talked to, kind of funny point, she said, the reform that we got in the debt ceiling bill that just passed, she said, is just kind of little kind of some little changes. She's like, that's like cheese pizza. So it's like, sure, no one's going to fight that one, but it's not like real big, meaningful reform.
You know what's divisive is Hawaiian pizza. There's people that like, that is not pizza, Josh. That it's like, you know, sacrilege that you would do that to a pizza.
Pizza's intense. My wife is from here in New York City. I'm from Alaska. There's a pizza place up there that does, you know, they do the chicken Thai, they do the yeah, gyro pizza. She's like, I don't know what this is, but this is not pizza.
Yeah.
I don't think we can eat
it. But cheese pizza, everybody can get behind cheese pizza. It is a universal love language. But yeah, even the word reform in permitting, even the word reform, that is a divisive word, right?
Yeah, my co-writer, the great Jen DeLuey, was kind of, as we were going over the story, she was kind of like, you know, you like maybe call it an overhaul, maybe call it, you know, because reform is, even that word is subjective, you know, with some groups saying, well, we're not reforming it, we're tweaking around the edges, or we're overhauling. So yeah, you're right. As we move forward and get into the real nitty gritty of how do we fix this system, how do we streamline the system, how do we make it so that this country can move forward and build all these things that people want, how do we do that in a way that works? That's really hard to do.
All right, I'm just going to tell you, first of all, I'm starving right now, and I will go for any kind of pizza. But having said that, in your story, like you talk about, there are, you know, the government has put requirements out there. We talk about net zero by 2050, right? There's requirements on companies, on the country to like move ahead, get these projects done, especially when it comes to cleaner energy. So, I mean, the pressure's on. What are the changes that are likely to happen or, you know, and that are being called for, Josh?
I mean, the main point would be, some of the main points that people talk about would be streamlining the environmental reviews. So instead of having, you know, one federal agency doing a long environmental review on the front end, and then another agency starting another one at the back end, but just doing one, one comprehensive environmental review. And, you know, so that'd be one to lop off of a couple of years. Another issue that's come up is judicial review is the courts, which is that some of these projects, they can get hung up in the courts, you know, because you have groups that will file lawsuits saying, you know, this project goes too close to these waterways. It violates sections of the Clean Water Act, so it shouldn't be built for that reason. And then the whole project goes into the court. The developers tearing their hair out. You know, inflation's driving up the cost of the project. They're not making any money. Their money's sitting around. And then it's, you know, before a federal judge, and they're talking about, you know, whether or not the gas pipeline or the transmission line is too close to some protected waterways. So another reform or overhaul, depending on how you want to call it, another tweak that some people would want to make would be to limit the power, limit how deep into the process the courts get. But overall, all of the reforms or fixes or overhauls would be about streamlining and making faster the process.
So we're going to have this Inflation Reduction Act that comes into play here. Is this going to help or hurt everything, Josh? Because there's a lot of money that's going to be sloshing around.
Right. So that's one of the points that came out that was important in our reporting, is we kind of wanted to ask, well, so is would permit reform help clean energy more, or would it help fossil fuels more? You know, because we talked to some fossil groups and they were sort of saying, well, yeah, we want to build gas pipelines so that we can export LNG. We want to, you know, American liquefied right. natural gas, you know, exported all over the world. But we need to be able to build pipelines to get it to ports. And that's being held up by permitting. But really what our reporting showed and the people we talked to is that the clean energy side of the ledger would end up getting a much bigger boost from an overall fix to the system.
Josh, we gotta jump in. It's a great story. It's in the upcoming new issue of Bloomberg Business Week. Our thanks to Josh Saul and Joel Weber. This is Bloomberg.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
I know we've got another guest from Insight. I'm going to toss it over to you.
Yeah, we do. Haley Sachs is here. She's the founder and chief executive officer of Finance is Cool. And if you're a younger person, you may know her as Mrs. Dow Jones, because she is an Instagram influencer, I guess, or is it TikTok, or is it, do you go across all the platforms?
Matt, I am verse. I do any platform. I like TikTok, Instagram, YouTube. If there are eyeballs, Mrs. Dow Jones is there.
And you have apparently a lot of eyeballs, right? I heard Caroline Hyde told me like 700,000 people follow you. Is that correct?
Close to a million actually now.
All right. So,
yeah.
But what do you do for these people? Like, you don't pick stocks, right? Mm-hmm. You're not telling them to put all their money into government bonds. You're just trying to, what, educate them financially?
Well, we never learn about money, Matt. So most people enter adulthood and we're given our first paychecks and we have no idea what to do with it. We make decisions completely on emotion or whim, and we lack the actual insight to feel confident. So I am that ladder. I fill that gap. I create financial confidence in my audience by teaching them.
But so what do you teach them? Like,
oh, everything. So we go over.
But you don't have an MBA or you don't have a CFA, or you didn't study finance yourself, did you?
I never was in the financial system, and I think that is what allowed me to think outside the box and create something that has never been done before. So I use humor, I use pop culture, and it took off really quickly because there's nothing really else in the space like that.
Carol, let me bring you in from Orlando.
Haley, hi. Nice to be talking with you. I do feel like it's interesting, kind of a contrast based on some of the conversations we've had at that Matt has had over at Bloomberg Invest, and also that we're having at Pershing Insight with a lot of the registered investment advisory world. But tell us about this space. What was it about your own experience and the questions that you had that have, you know, enabled you to kind of create your media world and help others? So talk to us a little bit about your own experience.
My own experience is I never learned about money, and I entered the workforce completely. I had no confidence. I was so scared, and I got my first job. I was working for Lorne Michaels, and they asked me if I wanted a 401k. They were asking me about healthcare, and I nodded as though I understood what they were saying, hoping that they wouldn't fire me on the spot, and then quickly went home that night to try and learn, and I was put to sleep by what was out there. And look, I grew up watching, you know, the Kardashians and loving Beyonce and like these fun, I love entertainment, and I didn't understand why in order to learn about money, it couldn't be lively, it couldn't be exciting. And so I started to teach myself, and I posted my lessons that I was using to, you know, just gain knowledge on my own time online, and literally within weeks it took off. So it was very, very fast.
Well, so talk to us too. And Matt makes a good point, because when you're dealing with people's money, and it's an interesting week where there's, you know, crypto is kind of under siege from the SEC. Yes. It's very easy for investors, you know, young or old, to be pulled into things that maybe could be questionable. I'm not necessarily saying that's the case of crypto, but I'm just saying in general. So what is it that you exactly, right? So I'm just curious what you lean on in terms of getting your information to make sure that it's really sound and solid for the folks that pop on your website.
Oh, I mean, my information comes from the top sources. Like, we're using, of course, we're using Bloomberg, we're using all the top publications, but I'm also not covering topical financial events unless they're relating to a bigger lesson. Like, I'm all about building long-term wealth. I'm just trying to get people to invest the money in their Roth IRA and, you know, save 20%, mm-hmm. make sure they have an emergency fund, avoid high interest rate debt. And if you want to take it further and start, you know, investing in individual stocks and things like that, that's great. But I would never preach that, because how often do individual stocks outperform an index fund?
Right. So it's not, this is what I was trying to clarify. So you're not giving investment advice.
No.
What you're trying to do is make people financially aware so that they can seek out their own investment advice.
Yeah, I want, exactly. That's exactly it. Like, I give you the knowledge. It's up to you to take action. I'm never going to tell you to invest in something, but I am going to tell you that you need to invest.
It's amazing that to me that you have a million followers, not because I don't think you can get a million followers, but no, because the idea that people care enough.
Yes.
No, that's not at all the case. I'm just thinking if kind of the stereotype in my head is that someone who goes on Twitter or spends a lot of time on Instagram wants to see the Kardashians and Beyonce and does not want to hear the word 401k, right? So that's what I think is really interesting.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm sitting right in front of you. You don't think that I'm giving Beyonce and Kardashian? Like, that's sort of my charm.
Right.
Is I am like glamorous and fun, but I'm also really smart about money, and I want you to be too.
I just think, you know, you're so right that kids aren't taught about this.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, even who work at Bloomberg, like for years, I didn't invest in my 401k.
No,
even though I worked here, it took Carol telling me to do it, you know, 10 years into my career for me to like figure out how to do that. So what do you hear about financial education? What do you hear about? Because there's just a lack of it, and we need to change that, right?
I mean, truly, whenever I'm, you know, doing events, I will have the audience raise their hands. Who here has, you know, was taught about money? And maybe one or two hands will go up. It is true. It's an epidemic. No one understands their finances. And it's something that we deal with every day. And it becomes this really emotional thing. It's not that the it's not that the meat and potatoes is hard. It's not that creating a budget is hard. It's not that investing your 401k is hard. But especially women, we have so much shame around it. But why would we have shame around something that we were never taught? Like, do you have shame about not understanding Italian? You know?
No. Like, and I don't understand.
Exactly.
Italian. Good guess.
I could tell you didn't speak Italian.
Talk to us about the women portion of it, because I know that you focus, I mean, more specifically on girls and young women mm-hmm. who, I guess what, they're maybe teachers think they need home ec rather than, financial economics.
Well, I mean, of course, finance is a very male-dominated space, and so it can feel very intimidating. And women are, in the past, have really abdicated their financial power. And I'm all about having them take that financial power back, because, look, even if you are married, say, to a man who is taking care of the finances, statistically, women outlive men. So even if you are, okay, I don't have to deal with this, I've figured out a way out, eventually you're going to have to. So let me give you the tools so that you know how.
I have to say, I've been just playing around with your website, and it's really entertaining, in terms of how you pull on pop culture over the years to get people to look at things like their 401k or think about, don't waste your time on money. Instead, think about growing wealth. So it's really entertaining and fascinating. Matt, you should check it out.
I will. I actually let my wife deal with the finances at my house.
I love that.
So I don't know if I'm in the minority here, but I think it's really important to get people to think about this stuff at the very beginning of their careers, right? Mm-hmm. By the way, how have you done since mm-hmm. Lauren?
Since Lauren Michaels?
Yeah.
Yes, I think I'm doing quite well.
Did you immediately start investing in your 401k?
Well, now I have my own business, so even better. I invested in myself, and I built something that
I
own.
All right, excellent. All right, Haley
Sachs. But you
better
be investing your 401k.
Yeah, no, now I'm maxing it out all the time. Haley Sachs, the founder and chief executive of Finance Is Cool. You can follow her across social media platforms at Mrs. Dow Jones.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Carol Masser along with Matt Miller. Matt, back at Bloomberg headquarters in New York City, attending and featuring guests from Bloomberg Invest All Day. I've been here at BNY Mellon Pershing Insight featuring guests. And right now, we have not only a guest, but a member of the Bloomberg family. With us right now is Bloomberg Intelligence Senior ESG Analyst Shaheen Contractor. She was in a panel here at Insight earlier today, Then versus Now, the Evolution of Sustainable Investing. Good to have you here with Matt and myself. Tell us about your panel. And we do wonder kind of where the sustainable space is, because it's been going through a little bit of a reckoning.
Sure. So the panel was, really about that evolution. And we spoke about how it's gone from, ethical or values-based more towards ESG integration. But the big question was, what's ahead, right? And I think the conclusion there was it's really the thematic. So, things like climate, things like gender. That's where people are looking to differentiate themselves. It also doesn't have the word ESG in it, which now is a fun word.
Are they really kind of taking it away?
No, I'm not taking it away, but I just think, if you say the word ESG, people tend to shy away. But if you say something like climate, they're a lot more okay with it.
Why are they shying away because of ESG? Because of
what? They don't understand what it means to, f- first thing, and I think also we all have seen the political backlash.
Right.
I mean, it's woke. Let's not lie. It's that.
Is it really all because of the political?
It's a bit of that, but also I think it's bringing up the challenges, which is people don't understand what ESG means. And we actually had a polling question, like what prevents your clients from doing ESG? And the second most, I feel like it was the second one, was we don't understand the boundaries, which means that they don't understand what ESG is and how to do it.
What about, I want to bring Matt in
like
just
scam,
a moment,
Shaheen,
but I do want...
Right? It seems like this is what the hucksters do, right? They slap ESG on their fund and they greenwash everything and then the suckers go and buy it. That's why people don't like ESG, right? Even before the concern about it being woke, you know, one ESG fund can shun fossil fuels and the other one can own ExxonMobil. I mean, that's why nobody buys it.
No, so I think the point is that ESG just means so many different things to different people. I think that's the challenge that even you're saying and you're talking about. But ESG is really about just data, right? It's more data. It's a 360-degree view of a company rather than a 180-degree view of just financial information. And how people use it varies so much, and I have to recognize that that's a challenge.
Yeah, but that, to me, then, doesn't sound like it deserves its own little vertical, if you will, because if there's so many different parameters, I mean, isn't that part of the problem? If you have ESG so and you're comparing one fund to another fund, but yet it has different missions.
Not really. So I put the comparison to, you know, people say ESG is not standardized, and yes, I agree, but, you know, take... And this is maybe, I don't know how good this is a comparison, but take like a macroeconomic model. Like show me 10 macroeconomic models that point to the same forecast of the economy, right? So ESG can mean, you know, within certain boundaries, it can and should mean a couple of different things. And a fund or a score should give you transparency into what it means so that you can agree for yourself whether you agree with that. Does that make sense? Because I feel like ESG is too subjective, where if we keep talking about standardizing ESG should or should not be Exxon, we're going to keep arguing for decades. What it should be is, you know, we call it ESG. This is how we do it. This is the transparent approach. And I, or Matt, or you can choose to decide whether you agree with that.
Matt, you got a thought on that?
No, I gave all my thoughts already. I mean, you know, I think, listen, you're going to invest. I can understand that some people will invest along the lines of their own values. And I think I applaud that. I do that, too. I don't want to buy and support something that I don't feel is right. But the whole ESG fad that we saw, I think, has died off because it means a different, completely different thing to different people. So there's no way that I can buy into, say, like Deutsche Bank has an ESG fund. I'm going to think it's good and Shaheen's going to think it's bad, or I'll think it's bad and you'll think it's good. That's not a great way to label a product. You know, if you label something like that, it's just hard to sell to a large group of people. So that's why I think you've seen the backlash. And then you have the whole woke political thing that, you know, just adds on to it, this sort of uninvestability.
I mean, I get the challenges. I get the, you know, the challenges with the term. But I think at the end of the day, what it is just it's looking at more data again, right? Like, if I put this acronym out, but if I ask you, you know, when you're choosing your partner, do you want more information or less information? You're going to tell me more information.
But does ESG mean anything? It's, like, in talking with Jay Clayton earlier today, the former chair of the SEC, you know, he talked specifically about the governance. You know, he was brought into Apollo, right?
Yeah.
Part of the board, non-executive chairman. But, you know, when they were going through some of their issues. Like, governance, we kind of get.
Yes.
It feels like, I think environmental we should get, although I think there's some movement, right?
Yeah.
You know, do you buy into a major integrated oil company because they, too, are figuring out how to do it, you know, and provide either their processes that they currently do in a better way, or they are embracing renewables. Mm-hmm. So does that make them, you know, that they can be in that category? Social feels like, oh, my God, you could go anywhere.
Yeah,
so maybe, like, why do we need to have that category?
So I think, again, like non-financial data, right? Like, what is non-financial data? I can almost term it as, you know, this ESG kind of lens.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it originated, right? Whether it's a good term or not, I still think it is, because it still encompasses the term non-financial data. And one doesn't have to use, you know, ESG. It's about what's material. Like, you know, for a mining company, it's safety.
Right.
Safety is a social topic. For cement, it's emissions. Emissions is any topic. So it's about what's material.
Financially material that could impact the company. Which is what it originally started at. And I feel like ESG went off in a whole different tangent.
Yeah, so that's
part of the issue.
Correct. So that's what I think it is today. So when I say more information, I just mean more information to make financially material decisions.
Matt's still not going to buy in.
It's okay.
I can just feel it. Right, Matt? Are you going to buy in?
I love well, I would for Shaheen.
Silence is like.
All right, we're going to leave it there. Of course, Bloomberg Intelligence Senior ESG Analyst Shaheen Contractor here at Pershing Insight 2023.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.